nothing where she used to lie. My inspiration has run dry. That's what's going on. Nothing's right, I'm torn. I'm all out of faith. This is how I feel.
Test, 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 level, level, there we go. That's my headset. Stick mic, stick mic, stick. Sounds good. Mic two, headset two. Got it.
Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports 0964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website, stevevick.com, coming to you from Presque Isle Downs, the morning after the big Masters card, and it was a terrific, terrific day of racing here, evening, I suppose, right, starting 4 o'clock, and leading just in time, respecting the other end of the state, respecting the action in Philadelphia. So yes, I did get I did get back to the hotel in time for EAG LES Eagles. Yes, that was very entertaining. Do you want me to? You don't want me to? No, you don't want me to sing, right? Fly Eagles, fly. No, I won't. I won't. I actually didn't even get a Fly Eagles Fly, my video up that I usually do on Twitter. I guess I was distracted. I was, but it was a very pleasant evening. I didn't see last week. Tina watched last week. I was in the car, and so I didn't get to watch. And Tina was watching for me, and she said. She sent me a very funny note. She goes, "This is torture." And I said, "Well, now you know what my father and I and generations of Eagle fans, when you're thinking about that game last week in Detroit, that they just could not seem to, you know, completely pull away and end. And this is not a league. It's very clear that the NFL is not a league where these days where any league lead is safe." So I said, "Now you're officially an Eagles fan, honey, because that's a feeling that all of us for at least between 1961 and 2017, anyway, all of us and subsequently a few times have all gone through that. But no, last night was a lot of fun. But leading up to an evening of football watching, had a very good day here. And I have not actually. I've got the charts, and I don't think they were. Do they report? They do. They did 1.8 million yesterday, and the card was very playable. And a little tricky, especially at the end. And we'll talk to Safi Joseph in this first half hour, who sent out not just the winner of the Masters, but also the third place finisher, Allworthy, who ran very well. And it was a very – Pat is going to stop by, Pat Morrell, and they're racing here today, of course. And Pat and I might debate a little bit the way the track played. It looked to some degree – I think it might have been a little bit of an illusion that – that speed was not good. There were some horses that ended up on the lead that got swamped, but I don't know if it necessarily meant that the rain and whatever went into it, because there were plenty of horses that attended the pace, that stayed close and finished to win. So some of it might have been circumstantial last night. And, obviously in the feature, we'll start with the feature, and I'll let Safi talk about this Artie's Princess. One thing I will tell you, if you saw my tweet last night, it just so happened that I was trying to get an appropriate paddock shot. The lighting, it was tough. I tried to take pictures of the stakes action, and we're going to talk to Glenn Wismer today, who won the mile and who has a really nice horse on his hands. And certainly Glenn Wismer's had his share over the years, but Joe Novogratz and Shirley Furious, that's a very interesting horse moving forward from this point. But Artie's Princess in the paddock, and Safi Joseph's horses, for those that see them, obviously you see them a lot in Florida, but you're getting used to seeing them all over the place. His horses look like polished wood, as it happens. And this Artie's Princess, first of all, she was the size of a stallion. she was bigger than anybody else in the paddock, and she looked like a real bruising, I think I said strapping presence, I think is what I said, in the paddock. And in fact, Todd Mostoller, who had had his horse in here, Maggie's Bid, and she actually suffered from thumps, which really ended up pretty much ruining her chances. I mean, she was eighth, but. And Todd also said, he said, look at this thing. And yeah, she was Artie's Princess. If you're a pick of the paddock type, she looked fabulous. It's funny, just from my vantage point in the corner of the paddock, got a couple of other shots, including Cafe Society, who ran a very good second, was basically languishing early, and for Shug, and for Joe Allen, and I got a great picture. Cafe Society stopped, and I think some of these horses were under the lights for the first time, because you saw them kind of looking and gawking, and you saw them, their eyes, a lot of white, and shows a little bit of concern in a horse. And so I think some of them might have been under the lights for the first time. And I got a great picture of Cafe Society kind of posing, and I sent it to Shug and Allison. And she ended up at 24-1, running a terrific second. I mean, it came from, I don't even know how far back she was, but she was dawdling early with Junior Alvarado. Ended up second, beating a length and a half. And I also sent a picture of Allworthy, who was third at 16-1. And so Artie's Princess, 3-1, and good job by Dick Powell with his analysis, which I put up at the website. And Dick picked Artie's Princess second behind Caravel. Caravel set the pace, and the pace was strong. I mean, don't kid yourself. 21-4, 44-2, 108-2 for a 114-2, a new track record. So this was a big performance from Artie's Princess, a We Miss Artie, a homebred of Ken Ramsey and his late wife, and out of a Stormy Atlantic mare, Stormkeeper. Ontario bred, actually. So not far from home, from Erie. Just a short boat ride away across the lake. Arnie's Princess with Jose Ortiz. And she actually, I give a lot of credit to Jose Ortiz, who sensed that the pace was hot. Everybody else that tried to stay near the pace, and I had talked about Boo Boo Kitty, she ended up last. She chased Caravel and, you know, then dropped anchor after a half mile and ended up 11th, 24-1. Who else? Dynasty Verone with Paco tried to stay close, ended up 7th. Allworthy was made kind of a steady advance under Edgar Gonzalez, and you know, clearly Jose Ortiz sensed the pace and let them, you know, light out early. So good ride by Jose Ortiz to win this Grade Two. We'll see what Safi says in a little bit. Probably join us in about 10 minutes or so about the dirt. I don't think she ever has tried the dirt. No. Nope. 10 synthetic starts out of 11 and one turf start. That was it. She ran in the Coronation Cup. Did not run badly, actually, in the Coronation Cup two summers ago. She's a five-year-old. She's a full mare. So that does account partly for her physical presence. Caravel at that pace actually did not disgrace herself. 6-5, Luis Saez, who won the mile for Glenn Wismer. But first and third for Safi. So we'll talk to Safi Joseph, and we will also talk to him about Skippy Longstocking in the Pennsylvania Derby. I'll get to that momentarily. Terrific. We'll be in Philly Friday to bring you the show, and it is a fabulous, crazy good set of races. 10 stakes on the 13 race card. So that was the Masters. Quick exchange with Michelle Lovell and Change of Control, who actually went off third choice. Artie's Princess took the money. Dick Powell picked her second, and good job by Dick. I kind of glossed over her a little bit. I mean, I tried to get away with Caravel and Change of Control. Change of Control, it was pretty clear this was not to her liking, this footing. And she was tentative, never really got out of a jaunt. She did not stride out and just haven't heard from Michelle this morning, but I'm going to guess that Colby Hernandez just said, she did not like what she felt under her. She ends up 9th in here at 4-1. So that was one of the highlight, the Grade Two here. But there was a lot of other good races. And he had a couple of dominant performances from a couple of horses that, looked like they were going to be dominant on paper. Valentine Bug with that allowance win, and in that starter, The Sinner Is You, Teresa Connolly, and for the Martinez's, the Dramedy Gelding, Valentine Bug that we had talked about. And actually, 6-5 was 440 was a good number on Valentine Bug. And The Sinner in You, however, is you, was 1-2 for Eduardo Rojas. But that one, he looked like he was going to be unbeatable, and he was. Nice Ace also was, 3-2 for Tim Girton and Bob Bone, made a lot of sense. The score, we did have a little score, and I hope some of you came along. Jill Jitterbug. And I got to tell you, I don't get up to my feet and get overly excited too often, but we were all sitting upstairs, and when I saw what was happening, that Delgado had plenty of horse, and that was great. Terrific ride by David Delgado on the cross traffic filly of Ryan Walsh and his mother and that's Shag Bark Farm. This was the firster that we talked about that had the full sibling that was fast on synthetic. And I said Walsh not necessarily a first out guy, but that, you know, this was a horse with the bullet and the recent sub 48 half miles that was pretty much touting herself. And then he also had the help yesterday from Todd, who remembered the dam, Sweet Nicosi, that came from Ryan Walsh and how successful she was over this racetrack. Anyway, we got 13-1, 2860, and with the obvious favorite who went off a tick under even money, that Megan Macon money. So that made the night quite okay. From there, how about the two other stakes? The Gem City, I should slip in, right? Christmas Diamond, Teresa Connolly at 20-1, paid $43.40. So Connolly with a two-win night, a Bated Breath mare that Sammy Camacho booted home, ahead over that Kate's Kingdom, the favorite, 2-1. And, you know, upon further review, as they say, Christmas Diamond made some sense, actually. Honestly, in fact, I'll put this up on the website, or on Twitter. Christmas Diamond was only, on Figs, was only a couple of lengths slower than the favorite, than Kate's Kingdom. And had a pattern coming in that actually, you know, kind of hinted at a good effort. So wins the Gem City, enhancing her value. And the other stake, the Dobbins. Where's the Dobbins? Uh-oh. Huh. Well, that's strange. Must be. Oh, that was Nice Ace. That was actually, Dobbins Landing was the Girton Bone Noble Mission winner, bred by Blackstone. So, and then came Glenn Wismer with Shirley Furious. This was also a good pick from Dick. And there's a great story, and Glenn is going to tell you that story when he joins us this morning. A horse that he picked out and actually was bird dogged by his son, Troy. A lot of you know Troy, and he works at Airdrie. And he said to coming into the Fasig October sale and said to his dad, take a look at this upstart colt. And he did. $18,000. $18,000 purchase. And was prepared to pay more. Right? So, actually, it says 15 on the program, but Glenn said to me last night, 18. This is a really nice horse, and I'm anxious for the Fig because I got a feeling that this is a breakthrough into the 90s on the buyer scale. Won by 1 3/4 with Luis Saez, who, and you know, he was one of the horses that was forwardly placed throughout. So we'll see what we'll have that debate. With Patrick Morrell later. And then finally in the nightcap that helped the make the pick four and pick five sing, how about 20-1 on Legio? This was the Admiral Kitten, Epona Farm, Carol Squinski, and this horse pays $41.60 to send you home with $638 in the pick four. And $1,029 in the pick five, and I you just knew. I mean, I reached for that Red Dubonnet, who really didn't lift a hoof, but you just knew that this was a race crying for a stranger, right? That you weren't taking, you know, Joyful Candy ran okay, got beat a half length at 2-1, but American Chaos, that's a horse that will not. It's simply, you know, you just can't lean on a horse like that in your multi plays. It's just a horse that is not going to, you know, to win too often. So I really, really enjoyed the day here yesterday, and thanks for those that came along and got involved. All right, we'll talk to Safi in just a couple of minutes. Sale notes, we can slip that in too. There's a chance, I don't know if we're going to hear from McPeak or not. I asked Kenny if he wanted to visit, but, you know, this is a serious, you know, right now, this is the wheelhouse for McPeak, really, and Cassie, and, you know, they're digging in and trying to find, I don't have to call every purchase a bargain at this point, and frankly, I don't think you can call it a bargain. Where is my numbers here? Come on, because I know I have it. There it is. Yesterday, it just goes to show. Here's a candy ride that tops the 600,000. I mean, it's just not letting up. Bread by Stone Street and Kim Lloyd signing for Tala Racing. So, you know, again, the stallion prospect scenario. How about Donato Lani and SF? Another significant colt. 485,000 for the Arrogate. Hip 2003 out of Secret Ballot. Bred by Will Farish and Partners. You also had a couple other $400,000 sellers. Take Charge Indy. How about that? With a colt that went to Maverick and Sienna. Maverick, of course, the racing arm of Windstar. This was an international equities bred product out of Dynamic Doll. Not This Time got a $410,000 colt. Justin Cassie picking this one off. Woods Edge bred and consigned. And the other $400,000 seller yesterday, Omaha Beach. There he is again. Mike Ryan signing. Mike Ryan digging his heels in, to say the least. A couple of other notables. How about Violence? Violence Philly was the top female that Kenny bought. And there you go. Ken McPeak, bred by Rhiannon Farms. So, another decent Philly seller yesterday, Akara Conti. Look at that. Hip 2014 for $280,000. So, the numbers are just crazy. Let's give you the quick total. Just slightly, this session, just slightly ahead, $27.5 million versus $27.3 million a year ago. Average up 2.4, median up 12.5. The totals, $355 million. And yesterday's, they surpassed all of last year. With yesterday's session. Yeah, and there's still five more days of horse sale. So, yeah, it's a free-for-all. You better eat your Wheaties. I'll tell you, it's amazing. All right. Well, Case, let me send you this. Let's reach for Safi, and we'll get the conversations underway, and I will pull out the Pennsylvania Derby fields as well. And you know, I don't. Last night, I guess on the announcements, if Safi Joseph doesn't come to your racetrack often, the inclination might be to go Joseph Safi. That's not an unusual hiccup. So I think the first time I came across his name, I identified him as Joseph Safi. That's good. I didn't know. It was new to me, right? The Pennsylvania Derby and the Cotillion, if you haven't had a chance yet, let me give you a rundown as Casey reaches for Safi Joseph. And from the rail, Zandon. Comes out of the Travers, of course, the Travers placement. And let me reach also for the morning wine so I can do this and you'll be prepared and have a good idea if you haven't had a chance yet to print up. And the PPs, I think it was 39 pages of PPs. So serious. It's a serious card that they put together. Zandon is 5-1 and your third choice in this Pennsylvania Derby. Rosario gets aboard in this spot with Flavian Pratt riding We the People. Icy Storm, and this is Felix Flores-Coba, and one of the outsiders, in fact, the longest shot on the board at 30-1, coming out of an allowance locally. B-Doc, and B-Doc may take money with the Philadelphia faithful, right? Undoubtedly. And, you know, he is really globetrotted. And this is our friend Joe Besseker. West Point has glommed on. And it took him a while to break his maiden. But when he did, it was a significant breakthrough. That came at Keeneland, going 7/8 when he romped, you'll recall, in the spring. And then from there, the Sir Barton placement. And this is his big audition. First graded stake opportunity for B-Doc and the Gormley Colt. That time might be right. He's been at Keeneland preparing. So B-Doc 20-1 with Frankie Pennington hopping aboard. Skippy Longstocking, and what perfect timing because I can hear Safi in the background. Skippy Longstocking off of the terrific effort in the West Virginia Derby. Going back to the placement in the Belmont, third, beaten six. And a horse that, you know, really was getting good as the spring turned into summer. And now takes the grade one swing in here. And again, Edgar Gonzalez, who keeps Edwin Gonzalez, who we saw here last night. And since Safi is joining us right on time, Safi, first of all, congratulations on last night in the Masters, the grade two, and you get the winner and the third place finisher. Well done.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you very much.
Your guys were so funny. I mean, they were beside themselves. They were yelling, 1-3, 1-3.
No, that's my Angel. He's like a foreman, and he also rubs some of those horses. He's very passionate, and even the hot walker Bodie, they show a lot of passion and care, and that's what we kind of look for in our staff. And you can't teach that. You're either going to have it or not. And but what we're very fortunate to have people that have a lot of passion for what they want to do.
Well, and you know, it's funny because I was watching the race and then the celebration and waiting for him to come back to, you know, her to come back to the winner's circle. And the van driver, the van driver said, he says, boy, I got those guys in the van. He says, he was saying they were, they had a good time. He said they were, he said at one point he pulled in somewhere and he said they were asleep. And so when they pulled in, he pulled in for gas or whatever he did. And he said they woke up and he said that was it. He said that from that point on, he said they were looking forward to last night's activities, and Artie's Princess delivers. I'll tell you one thing, Safi. I don't know if you saw my tweet. I put a picture up. She and Caravelle were parading pre-race, and Artie's Princess was the pick of the paddock. I mean, she is a big, beautiful mare.
Oh yeah, she's a grand mare. Like you would think she would one day become a good mama, but on her size, she's built like a colt almost. She's huge. That's Mr. Ramsey's program. He just breeds quality horses, and she's another one, a good one that he's bred.
This is a horse that Wesley had for a while through the summer of last year, then got a significant break, came back to you, and you got to get to know her. She won the Ballade up at Woodbine. She's pretty much exclusively been on the synthetic. She is an Ontario bred, so she gets to take advantage of races like the Ballade. Talk about what you've learned about her and, you know, where you think you are. I mean, coming out of this, certainly the Breeders' Cup would be a crazy place to try dirt for the first time, but We know that if that's presented to Ken Ramsey, he's not going to say no.
Yeah, I don't think she'll serve just from her training. I think she will serve. I mean, I know she didn't serve once at Wesley, and it was 5.5. Just training her overall, she acts like a silly little stretch out. I didn't want to reinvent the wheel yet because there were some targets that we were trying to go for. And last night, the race before at Woodbine, I think we learned a lot. We put her on the lead that day. She broke a little slow, and she got tired. And then after that race, I decided, you know what? Now is the time to experiment with her. I spoke to Jose. I said, Jose, she doesn't need the lead. I think she's actually better with a target. And he rode her yesterday masterfully. And I think that's how we will ride her from now on. I think she's better held up. She has a more explosive kick when you call on her.
You know, it's funny you bring that up because you gotta include Jose Ortiz's ride. Talk about last night, because it was clear that Jose sensed early there was a lot of pace on, and he didn't rush her, and that I think paid off.
Yeah, I mean, she was far back, actually further back than I thought she would be. I didn't want her to lead, but when you look, she was basically second to last after the first eighth of the race. On yesterday, in my opinion, that was her most powerful performance of her career. So the experiment definitely worked, and it was a master ride from Jose. He found the right splits when they came, and you got to give him a lot of credit for executing the trip that he did on her.
He was delighted. I mean, he came back beaming and was thrilled with her. First time Irad had ridden her, actually, in the Coronation Cup 2 summers ago at Saratoga, but first time for Jose, and he was, you could tell, he was impressed with every part of who she is.
Yeah, she's a great mare. She was obviously good for Wesley before we got her, and thank God we've been able to continue on our good path with her.
Let me take a look here. I checked early this morning, and the figs were not up, but let me check back and see if we've got a number yet, and we do not. All right, so we'll keep a watch out. Dick Girardi, I think, does them for here. See if she gets back into the 90s when she won the Bessarabian back in 2020. She got a 96 buyer, and on the sheets, she's been fast. And it'll be very interesting to see what decision you make and where she's going to turn up and what opportunity you want to take next.
Yeah, there's a couple more stakes at Woodbine on the Tapita. I don't know if we go there again. After that win last night, she has a pretty good chance of winning the Sovereign Award for Canada. She's won it already, and sure, I think that will put her as one of the leaders to win it again. But we haven't come up with anything in plan. I mean, she's going to race on next year again. I was speaking to Mr. Ramsey yesterday, and he says he likes to run them, so all being well, maybe she'll have one more race this year and then give her a little break and bring her back for next year.
I got to ask, you know, because she's been, you've kept horses at Saratoga. Steve Asmussen has as well, and of course Chad, etc. And she was working up a storm at Saratoga, including a series of 47 and change, a 47-3 bullet right on Labor Day weekend, and then she even came back with a 46-3. How many have you kept at Saratoga? And you know, with those kinds of, I mean, it's morning efforts, but boy, for her to be getting over that track, the main track, with those kinds of works, I she's got to get a chance on dirt, doesn't she, Safi?
I think some of those times are more flattering than they were visual. She was in company and all them, so she's getting encouraged to go on a bit faster than she was, and she's come off the bridle in those works where her workmates and each of them were better than her. You know what I mean? Doesn't mean, I mean, until you really try, you don't know, but she doesn't act like a filly that will be at her best in the dirt. But it's, again, sometimes you never know with these horses until you run them.
Well, as it happens, I one thing I saw afterwards that sort of kicked myself a little bit, because I didn't discount her per se, but I you know, quote unquote, preferred others more. But the fact that she had come out of that Hendry, Hazelbrook ran very well over the weekend. Got beat by Atfield and Fipke, Lady Spitespear. But Hazelbrook came back out of that Hendry and ran well. So
Hazelbrook ran second.
No, she's kept good company. She's kept good company up there in Woodbine.
No, most definitely she has. She has kept moving. And I think one of the keys to Steve is I really liked how she sat off the pace yesterday, relaxed, and kicked in.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that, I think that's going to be one of the keys going forward. Or that's why I believe that maybe next year, like stretching her out, going like a mile on the grass, and maybe something that works to her board day.
Well, we've got something to look forward to and tinkering. Talk about the four-year-old that finished third in here, too. I sent a picture, actually, of Allworthy to Nick Casada, slam dunk. And we just mentioned Edwin Gonzalez, and here he is. This was a nice effort for her.
Yeah, most definitely. And she actually looked at the top of the lane like she might win Allworthy. And
yeah.
She's a filly that she's always trains well on the morning, trains very good, and kind of never put out. I mean, she was graded three place already before us, but has never delivered as much as we think she could. And that was the reason for trying the Tapita yesterday. She had a sibling that won on the grass, and we figured 6.5. She was impressive at Churchill on the dirt, so at least we're going the right distance. For a brief minute at the top of the lane, I thought she was win there, but she kind of flattened out the last bit, and she ran credible. And now she's grade two place. She's one that's going to go to the seal at the end of the year. So we'll kind of get one more race into her. I don't know which route we go yet, but it'd be nice to win a stake with her before she goes to the seal.
Allworthy, she's a tonalist, the Shell Evans bred, and was a modest purchase, and has done very nicely. Multiple graded stake place now.
Yeah, she's graded stake place on the dirt and the Tapita.
Yeah. Nice. All right. Out of a Medaglia d'Oro mare. And we should also, before I talk about Philadelphia, got to mention that you got a placement with Novosol, who was kind of misdiagnosed from a morning line standpoint, and then took a bunch of money and ran third in that mile. And that race is going to be a good race, looking back, because that winner is a good horse.
Yeah, I don't know what happened in the morning line. It was 30-1. And, I don't know if they meant to meet 3-1, but that was kind of weird that they could make worse 30-1. He opens up favorite. I mean, that was a very off morning line. He ran well. Novosol got a tough trip. Pace was slow, and he was kind of bobbling on the inside. And Jose couldn't really get him out. It was just one of those races where you're drawing one, and there's not much choice you could do. And, I mean, it's not a bad ride. It's a bad trip. When he did find some daylight, he stayed on. He's not a horse with a quick turn of foot, but he stayed on and ran quite just missed second. Thought overall he's a good horse on the Tapita. We'll probably take him to Woodbine as a grade three next month that we'll consider with him.
He's been down in Florida, and in fact, he came in hot as well with a 58-4 work. And you've tried a bunch of different things with this horse, Safi. He's a Brazilian bred, and down at the ovals there, this was a distance horse, and it seems like maybe this range, this mile and a 16th, might be more to his liking.
Yeah, I mean, I think. He's very. He could run on the grass. He ran third on the grass to Kufu, a Gulfstream in a mile and a half race. That was probably a tad far for him, but he seems to excel on the Tapita. So like he was unbeaten on the Tapita before today. That's the reason we tried to catch him on the Tapita yesterday again. It was obviously a big purse. I think we're going to stay on the Tapita for at least for now. You know what I mean, once we get back to Gulfstream in the winter, then we'll probably have to go to the turf again for some stakes. But for now, we're going to stay on the Tapita.
Let me turn to a couple of other places, and then we'll talk about Philadelphia. But you did win that stake at Gulfstream on Saturday. Blind Spot wins the Our Dear Peggy.
Yeah, she's a 2-year-old filly. She's been pretty decent filly so far. I mean, she hasn't run fast on the figures, but she's been decent enough. That was the main reason for trying that race. She was coming off a dirt race. Was there wasn't anything for our Gulfstream, and she worked what we thought.
Right.
It was worth trying to get black type under. She was very gutsy. I thought she handled the two turns fine. That was a new first thing doing for the first time also. And I thought she was gutsy enough to win the race and get some black type, which is help her going forward. I think that was her best race so far. So we might kind of go to the Jessamine at Keeneland next month on the grass and give her a try there.
Excellent. Speaking of grass, let me also get your feedback on Kentucky Downs. You sent out a few, and you had some success.
Yeah, we had a good Kentucky Downs meet. We won 5 races, and thankfully, the horses ran well. There's a short meet, so you always want to get off to a good start. If not, you're in trouble. The money's so good at Kentucky Downs that it's something that you want to target every year. I mean, you're running for insane purses. And it's very tough competition, obviously, but if things could go your way for that week, you could get a good roll, and that's what we did. We were able to win 5 races, and all the horses seemed to show up and run well, most of them at least.
What did you give us a feel for, you know, for what you thought about identifying horses to send there for starters, and you know, then what you learned with obviously this was the, you know, the most that you've sent over there, and they operated at every level. And by the way, I should note one of the wins that I kind of clued me into what, you know, what you were doing and what the potential was Axthelm for Ed Seltzer. And I was delighted for Ed and Bev Anderson. And I sent Ed a note. And I guess he was fielding some offers for Axthelm.
Yeah, Axthelm, we kind of ran him a Gulfstream race to get a prep into him that we didn't mind if he got beat, that we figured it would set him up for Kentucky Downs. Obviously, if he won, we would have been happy with that, too. But he jumped up on the grass, and he won nicely. Stepped up nicely in the second start and won well. He's a horse that we think has a future. He's a son of Into Mischief, and he's bred by Ed. We're going to go to Kima with him in an allowance next time. We actually entered him back at Kentucky Downs, but he didn't draw back in.
So right now, Ed did not sell yet?
No, he didn't. He didn't sell him. He didn't get him sold.
All right. First of all, the fact that he was a friend of Pete Axthelm's, and just the fact that there's a horse out there that might introduce Axe to a new generation is pretty wonderful. And I'm going to get Ed. I'll get Ed on again before he runs next. So I'm glad this came up. No, most of the horses ran well. The stakes company was a little tough, but you know, you learn about them, and coming down that hill, it's not for every horse.
No, it's not. Some horses sound like, and the stakes company, some of the stakes races, we were just taking shots, hoping that some horses get them. I mean, you got to take chances with 500 and 750. And then, like, as you said, it's a horse for course. We've had 2 horses that won there previous years, Max KO and Sugar Fix, and both of them came back and repeated. So some horses just excel at it, and some horses don't handle it. And sometimes through trial and error, but I'll tell you what, if you get a horse that excels, I mean, they really move up big on that course if they like the course.
Well, let's talk about coming up this weekend. Start with the Pennsylvania Derby. Skippy Longstocking out of the West Virginia Derby win. And, you know, I think everybody knows who the favorites are going to be when we talk about Taba and Zandon and Cyberknife. But Skippy Longstocking comes in with the triple-digit fig win, a 102 in the West Virginia Derby. And seems like he's still moving forward.
Yeah, he's a horse that's progressively got better and better. He definitely tries hard. He's throwing a lot at him, and he's keep answering the question. He deserved to win one of those races, one of these derbies, and he got it done last time in the West Virginia Derby. Hopefully, he can go forward and improve. Now he's facing quite a different kind of caliber horse, so he's going to need to improve again. I mean, if the buyer was legit last time, you would think that gives him a chance, but he still needs to improve it. This is the best field he's ever faced, basically, in his life.
Skippy Longstocking for Dan Alonzo. This is an exaggerator and another horse that was a reasonable purchase that has just steadily improved, Safi. I mean, this is actually is really, you know, kind of heartening. You know, you start out at Gulfstream, 49 buyer, 4th, beaten 5. Then comes back, second start, 65 buyer, 2nd, beaten 3. Breaks through in the 3rd start, a 75 buyer, you know, has just, you know, really with experience. And, you know, when you pay $37,000 for a horse like this, this is gravy. I mean, he's exceeded all possible expectation.
No, most definitely. I mean, he's owned by the same owner as Nova Soul, and I bought him for them at the OBS sale for $37. It was actually a buyback. The reason we took a chance on him is he's a good-looking horse, but I trained his half-brother, and I told him at least in Miracle Produce, the first foal was decent. I mean, Exaggerator hasn't turned out to be the best stud. So I said, we're going to take a chance on the mirror. And, I mean, he's exceeded all expectations. He bought a horse at 37. He ran in two legs at a Triple Crown. He placed in one of them. And then he was able to win the West Virginia Derby. He's had a campaign that we're very thankful for him. And he's a horse that, as I said, he tries. There's a lot of try in him. And he seems like he keeps moving forward. So he's going to need to run the race of his life on Saturday to be competitive. But we're not going to doubt Skippy because he keeps trying.
Well, how about the where you stand with White Abario too? We can't gloss over him.
White Abario, I'm obviously very disappointed in Mama for maybe my fault, maybe one race too many with all the shipping. After that race, we kind of reset the barriers and we got him out to Saratoga. We said we'd keep him in cool weather and let him just train and see where he is, give him like a working vacation. We started him back up, and each work, he sold us on the Pennsylvania Derby. There was no like pressure to go to this race. If he worked well, he would tell us. And each of his works have been as good as he ever worked in his life. So when a horse is coming off a race like that, that he got beat last time, basically a non-showing, in the back of your mind, you can't really have a ton of confidence. So, but he's shown us on a morning that we believe he's in his top form, and we go there hopeful. We go there very hopeful that the White Barrier shows up. If the real White Barrier shows up, I think he can run with most of them.
He draws outside in this group, and it is a tough group, and actually made him 8-1. So Skippy, I don't know if I agree with these. Skippy 10-1, White Abario 8-1. I think those numbers probably flip by the time the gates open. We should also mention the other starters, because you've got the Reds in the Greenwood Cup and Of a Revolution in the Gallant Bob.
Yeah, the Reds, he's a horse that we acquired recently on a trainer change, and he won for us at Saratoga. He ran second for us at Saratoga, and then he won. Trying the distance for the first time, obviously, that's a question mark. He acts like he'll do it, but until they do, you never know, going a mile and a half. So we're hopeful that if he handles the trip, that he should run well. I mean, Todd's horse, Fearless, and it's going to be very tough to beat, even if he does handle the trip, but... I think if he handles the trip, he'll go close.
And then in the Gallant Bob.
Yeah, Alba Revolution, he's in the Gallant Bob. He's a horse that's always tried, and he's run some credible races. We're going to put some blinkers on him this time. He worked in on last week. He had a short work in them on Sunday at Saratoga.
Yeah.
And feel like a little blinkers, maybe get him to sit handier for the rider and be more on cue when he's needed. That's a very tough race. I mean, there's an amazing card that they put on this week at Park. All
big
these fields, there's so much depth to them and quality. So it's a good betting card for the fans.
Steffi, I got to ask you, because you've got very strong numbers putting blinkers on, and you know, for those that look at trainer stats, a lot of times you look at blinkers and you know, there's offers and there's, you know, single digit percentages. You clip at 21% putting blinkers on. What's the deciding factor for you with blinkers? And you mentioned them working in them. How do you make your decision? Because you obviously, you know, there's certain trainers that Michael Hushin famously was deadly putting blinkers on. I mean, talk about your strategy when you add a hood.
I mean, it's just true trial and error with each horse, like trying to figure out things. The more, if you feel like you're just not getting enough out of them or they're not paying attention, you'll try. And you don't know. Like, sometimes you'll have a horse work well in blinkers, and you'll run them in the blinkers, and they it'll have an adverse effect on them. So you have to do it through trial and error. I'm not big to run horses first time out in blinkers. Very rarely would I ever put blinkers on horses first time out, or I don't believe in training them in blinkers, even if they run in blinkers, like just gallop it. So if we're going to breeze them, sometimes we'll put some blinkers on them and just see how they get on from there. And as I said, each horse is different. And some horses, it does help tremendously. And overall, most of them, it probably has about the same effect.
How big of a cup do you start out with?
Yeah, most of the time just a French cup. So it's like, it's a bit more than a cheater. And it depends, again, on the horse. I mean, but very few horses that we run in a full cup blinker or even a three-quarter. I would say majority of our blinker horses will run in a French cup or a cheater blinker, which is just basically three-quarters of an inch. Not very big, yeah.
Well, you put them on with purpose because you don't click at 20% putting blink. Anybody that looks at trainer stats, you don't see that number. You know, strong blinker stats all that often. It shows you know what you're doing, and certainly the way the horses looked here last night, all came here off of trips, van rides, and they all looked spectacular, and especially Artie's Princess winning the Grade 2. Safi, I appreciate it. Talk soon.
Thank you very much, Steve. Take care.
Safi Joseph, everybody, and here's a terrific effort by Artie's Princess. Still no figure. John Sikora is going to join us next. And, Case, get John's waiting for us because he's got a busy day, of course, at the sale. And I must admit, I'm really looking forward to visiting Alapa Breeders' Cup week when we come back to Kentucky. I mean, here I am. I haven't really – I only left Sunday from Kentucky, and here I am already planning to come back for Breeders' Cup. Now everybody, part of that was that Jim Gluckson sent out the credential request, so that gets these performances. Let's be honest, these efforts that we're seeing these weekends, that'll get you excited toward Cup. As the fields start to come together. The sale, though, continues, and five more sessions. John Sikora joins us from Hill and Dale that continues to enjoy outstanding sale results. John, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Steve?
I'm terrific. Saw your boy at Churchill on Saturday. I hadn't seen him since that day at Gulfstream several years ago, and I couldn't believe it. He's a grown man.
Almost there. Still relies on his allowance, but in every other respect, he's a grown man. So he's taking a love for the horse business. So it's exciting for me to hopefully have a next generation of somebody keenly interested and. We'll follow him along, and seems to have grown a real passion.
It's the funniest thing, John, too, because I was spending the early part of the afternoon with Dr. Politti, and I don't even know how it came up, but he had been with Kevin Dineen, and then all of a sudden he mentions Kevin's son and your son, and then literally a half an hour later, we're down by the paddock, and there's your boy. I was like, wait a minute, this is crazy. It was kind of funny. It was like
I tell my kids all the time, hockey and horses are a very small world, and everybody gets to know who you are and what you do. So be careful. There's no secrets in either business. So we're good friends with the Dineen family, and I meet Kevin through Joel Quinville, and Jess used to play hockey, doesn't anymore, and Will's son goes to Yale, and my grandfather is a graduate of Yale, and so everything's kind of interconnected.
I love it. Well, and the hockey, the hockey connection to horse racing is quite remarkable, actually.
I don't know why it is, but every hockey player I know has been exposed to the races, absolutely loves it.
Yeah.
Like California,
exactly.
Jamie Roenick, Eric Johnson, Al Samuelson, Joel loves it, Eddie Olchuk. Everybody, I have a bunch of guys that played for the Third Blades here, 25 years ago, American League team, Canadian boys. I met them all. We became good friends. They're coming to the Breeders' Cup. They're habitual gamblers, going to all the big events. They just absolutely love it. So if somehow the industry can get hockey players to the races. I mean, the old guy, John Ferguson, who's, you know, famous NHL tough guy, he was with San Jose when they'd come, he'd always come to my house and we'd watch the races on TV, and they absolutely love the races, you know.
It is funny. I mean, Eric Johnson, bringing the cup to Del Mar a few weeks ago for the big cup party that he threw. I would have loved to have been there for that. There's a real parallel, and bring them on, as many as possible. And in terms of this sale, John, I don't even know what to say. I'll just throw it to you. Give us your read on the market. It feels like it's out of control.
Yeah, well, you know, I how would I synopsis the week? I would say that if you're lucky enough, and we were in several spots, that all the right people are on your horse, you get too much. But there's a lot of horses that either by veterinary scrutiny, which is kind of a pet peeve of mine, or you just miss, like you're an inch too short or a little plain-headed or something not significant, but you could understand when someone wants something perfect, they pass on. There are a lot of horses that don't get sold for stud fee, and listen, I'm not complaining, because we've got the ones they like, you know, they bring fortunes, but I don't think our buying bench is as deep as it should be. I think it really concentrates on, you know, the perfect specimen, and a lot of horses kind of get unsold. You know, like someone like, you know, Donato, when he's working for Bob, they buy whatever they want, but it's got to be exactly what they want, and that's not a critique at all. They're, you know, world class and probably have no equal, but you know, they might bid on 20 horses of 3,000 or 4,000. So it's, you know, there's a lot of in between. I think there's real opportunities for someone that has a really good working relationship with a racetrack veterinarian, because so many horses get turned down by the vet. Again, I'm not a vet, so I can't critique what they do or do not like, but a lot of horses we've had that have never been unsound, never taken a bad step, never had a fusion, never had a problem with a joint, that, you know, in the end, we go from five guys to nobody because, well, the horse didn't vet, and there's a vague description of a sesamoiditis or a slight lucency, something, you know, like, and you're stuck with your horse. And I think the veterinary scrutiny makes it tough, and then, you know, like I said, a lack of depth beyond the, you know, the sort of best of sale. And, you know, with purses and the excitement in the game, hopefully, you know, we'll have more sort of middle of the road buyers, someone up to 200. I think we need lots more of those. And the groups and the syndicates are succeeding, and every year there seems to be another one. They're dominant buying force. So, you know, the higher it is, the higher it is across the board. So I think escalating prices and values are good for the business. Obviously it can't be ridiculous where only a few can buy a horse, but every year there's a horse that comes from nowhere that didn't cost a lot or didn't vet or nobody liked, that, you know, wins an important race. And I think that's a great sort of equalization, you know, to distribute those horses amongst the ones that cost $800,000, the one that cost $42,000, and everybody gets a chance to win. It's I think it's encouraging. You know, I've always said it's not a game that you can buy. It doesn't matter how much you spend. You know, there's always a horse you didn't like or nobody saw that came up and beat everybody.
Obviously, John, you know, Curlin figured to be, you know, one of the drive trains at the sale, and three seven-figure sellers. Talk a little bit about, you know, the consignments and, you know, the stallion success. We're at a point in the sale where we're going to start, you know, to see more Army Mules, the World of Troubles starting to get their opportunity. Talk about how you're, you know, you're viewing the way you're, particularly your stallions, are performing.
Yeah, I mean, the Curlin is a horse unto himself. himself now. He's reached that that penthouse that very few horses get to. You know, there's him, Into Mischief. There's, you know, Quality Road. There's two or three horses that are proven classic sires in my own opinion. And I never do comparative ads. I don't like to compare, you know, vendors or stallions one against the other. I would just say this, that in my opinion, I believe the best chance you have to win a classic race is with a Curlin. And, you know, he's very likely to have back-to-back filly champions this year with Nest. I think that happened with Deputy Minister, like, you know, 40 years ago or something, you know. I think he had, he was back-to-back. Reviewer with Ruffian was back-to-back. So I think there's only two other times I can recall in 60, 70 years. I'm not a historian. Maybe there's more, but I know it's been a long time. So, you know, I just think of that. And, you know, he nearly had an Oaks winner again with an Oaks winner last year, and Malathot and Clairiere and Nest. Those, you know, two of those three are going to be champions. So it's pretty remarkable. So we just follow him along. We're blessed that he's at our farm. People recognize his quality. You know, we sold a yearling colt for $1.7 million at September, which we owned co-owned with Three Chimneys, who bought the whole horse. He averaged over $1 million in Saratoga, so his accomplishments are pretty, you know, known in every household. Now, Army Mule, I'm thrilled with Army Mule. He's a horse I loved. I really wanted to have him. Thought he could be a Clean's Music kind of horse, and he's got 15 winners. He's just, I think, 30,000 behind Bolt D'Oro to be the leading two-year-old sire in North America. He's got two stakes winners. They run dirt and turf. The filly won at Horseshoe, and excuse me, the other filly won at Kentucky Downs, and he had a maiden allowance winner. I think all but one of his 15 winners are maiden allowance winners. So, you know, it's got to get over the hump. But right now, I'd be very, very excited and happy and bullish on Army Mule, and could be on his way to being an important stallion.
Should also note, of course, Good Magic, John, is selling well and performing well as well. 12 so far, over 200,000.
Yeah, and you know, he's top five in the sire list. They've earned more than $1 million. He's got two graded winners. I think Justify has three. Those are the only two horses with multiple graded winners. He's got the, you know, Tom Amos Colt, would point to the Breeders' Cup. You know, so there's he's had a lot of horses have not yet run. So we're excited. Champion son of Curlin, and you know, the thought was. And is, you know, we need a son to stand next to Curlin. That's a superior sire, and hopefully he'll do that. Ghost Shepherd had a very exciting two-year-old winner at Churchill, and he's got the phenomenal filly in Canada that Donato and SF and that group have. You know, she won the plate in the Oaks, and she'll run a grade one next. So, I always say when someone says, gee, how old is he? So it doesn't matter. You know, you're only old when you stop winning. So if Tom Brady doesn't keep winning, he's old. As long as he's winning, it doesn't matter how old he is. You know, what's the difference how old you are? Come beat me. So, you know, Ghost Zapper, he had, Fearless this year, and he's got Myra, and then he won the Dubai, the Saudi Cup the year before. So, I mean, he gets really good horses every year. I think he's got a sensational two-year-old. I thought the horse is very impressive. So, you know, no let-up in him. You know, we'll have a trouble first crop our yearlings. And, you know, the performance test is the only thing that counts with stallions. Once they start winning, everybody likes them. The ones that were too small are just big enough. You know, you get a lot of doubters, but once they're runners, then everybody flocks to horse, and you know, I understand that marketplace that, you know, you've got to be probably a singular believer in, you know, some of your horses, and you know, provide them with opportunities like we do with Army Mule, and we bought mares for him, and Vinny Volo's been a great partner, and you know, has never balked at any of the ideas I had to participate fully, and you know, we bred a stakes winner in our partnership. He bred the other stakes winner, so I think getting behind a horse and supporting a horse, you know, what better way to tell the public you believe than to, you know, put your money up and be a supporter, not just you know, advertise the horse. So
yeah.
Well, that's a good thing happening with the Lions, and may, you know, may continue to follow the years once you determine quality and, you know, all the big races are.
Hopefully, we'll have several starters by several of our stallions, and they will perform well.
John, I got to mention too, Cantheros, who is $20,000. How about the $570,000 hip that Cherie DeVoe took home from Hinkle, and another $200,000 seller? That one was a filly, by the way. The $570,000 seller, Chad Schumer, signing for one, a colt for $200, and then another 567 between $100,000 and $180,000. Cantheros selling at big multiples of that fee.
Yeah, you know, he's a really solid sire. We're hoping Dave's going to break through and, you know, produce more Grey Wall winners. So I think he's at a great spot in the marketplace where you sell yearlings for a multiple of stud fee. But not only that, I'm certain he can sire Grade 1 horses. And if he comes up with, you know, another XY Jet or, you know, superior horse to that effect, then I think the market, you know, jumps then again. So really solid horse, gets winners, gets stakes winners. They try hard. They're sound. They have a lot of starts, and people have been rewarded to breed to them. And I love when people breed to our horses and they sell yearlings for, you know, for multiples, particularly the little guy.
Exactly.
You know, has the $30,000 mare and sells a $250,000 yearling, you know, with a $20,000 stud fee. That's, you know, that builds a barn, that builds a future for a guy. So I think he's contributory to a lot of success for the small to medium breeders.
John, I know you're getting over to the sale, and looking forward to seeing you Breeders' Cup week. And on that topic, stallion shows and chances for people coming into town to come out to Alapa and take a look.
Absolutely, we're open all the time. We're welcoming of guests. We also have now a formal tour that we do that my wife handles. It's all on social media, and I think she's got like 150 tours organized now. So, you know, to share and see the place, and, you know, for people that want to tour the farm, that's one experience. If somebody just wants to come and see a stallion that they want to breed to or look at a stallion, you know, that's just a phone call to the office to look at a specific stallion. So, you know, we're gates are open. We're welcoming. We want to share the place, share our stallions, and you know, let people come at their leisure. So we're sort of not nonstop busy with showing stallions to prospective breeders and people have heard about the farm and would like to see it. So we're amenable to all things.
Well, HillandaleFarms.com, of course, and we'll be out for a visit Breeders' Cup week. John, continued success for all the progeny of the stallions, and I appreciate the opportunity to catch up and get a snapshot of your thoughts on the way the sales progressed.
Great, thank you. Thanks for the discussion, and as always, anytime I'm on, thank you for promoting the game in a positive way, and your enthusiasm, the guests you have are make it a great show to listen to, and hopefully compelling to people that have a mild interest and maybe want to get them in the game and hear some real talk of people that are in the business. So congrats to you and your team.
John Sakura, everyone. John, thanks so much. John, of course, when you read Sid's piece a couple of weeks ago from his visit, and I'm looking forward to getting out there. Let's take a break here. We're past the top of the hour, and I've got a quorum. I've got a table full in front of me, including One of the veteran horsemen that has already had a great career that goes back 30 years? At least, right? Well, when did you win the Kentucky Oaks with 92? Oh my God. So there you go, 30 years. Glenn Wismer is with us, and the horse that won the mile last night is a serious, serious horse. Patrick Morrell is back. Can't stay away. Why not? And after stopping in Erie for years and years and years and threatening to come meet me, we can't even meet at the Steak and Shake because they closed the damn Steak and Shake. It's gone. Now it's a Korean crab house now. And so you can't even go get a black and white shake, the side-by-side, a strawberry banana. Nothing. Or guts. You can get weed, though. There's marijuana every 30 yards. There's another marijuana dispensary. Unbelievable. Doug Salvatore is here. He's a father now. It's the new mature version. It's not really, is it? Well, you got the baby. That helps, right? And the wife. And hang on, we're going to take a break. We're going to come right back. We're going to have a lot of fun, I think, Glenn, to celebrate his win and talk about his terrific career and this venue, because this is a place you want to run horses every 2 weeks. You can do it. He's also going to explain about the benefit of bare feet, about, you know, keeping a horse's no hoof, no horse, as they say. We have no idea what Doug is going to talk about. He's got he's a jock agent after a long, huh? The agent to the stars, exactly. And Pat can talk about this terrific ideas from yesterday, the opinions. You had a good day. Yeah. Yeah, you had an okay day. We're live at Presque Isle. It is absolutely gorgeous. And things worked out yesterday after that rain. It ended up getting very nice. We had a beautiful evening. In fact, it was a little warm. And were you here last night? Okay. All right. We'll take the break because we got to get this started, but I got to get the break in. The first time you've ever been live, I think, right? We've only ever been on the phone. Yeah, but never in person, like at Saratoga. And you didn't come. You can't. You got a baby. Dougie Sal, Pat Morrell, Glenn Wismer. When we come back, this should be a problem because I've only got a mic and two headsets. So we got to work that out. Back after this, the Presque Isle got about an hour and 45 minutes. Andy Serling later. We'll check in with Papo as well, see how the Form to Win weekend went, and much, much more at the races. I can see the finish line to this two-week odyssey that started at Presque Isle, ends at Presque Isle. I do have to make a stop in Rochester to see the grandchildren and deliver. I bought so much stuff for the kids. I'm one of those doting grandfathers, I guess. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
The Southern California Thoroughbred Racing Circuit returns to Los Alamitos with opening day set for Friday, September 16th. Four stakes races highlight the meet led by the Los Alamitos Special on Saturday, September 24th. The meet will feature stakes every Saturday and Sunday afternoon. And racing fans, the meet will also feature an on-track live money handicapping contest on Saturday, September 24th. You could win a berth to the 2022 NHC. And racing fans, the best of night racing continues at Los Alamitos every Saturday and Sunday night. Outstanding racing action is in store this weekend with stakes trying.